Earlier this week, I was scrolling through my Instagram feed and I noticed a video posted by Kyron Wheatley. Kyron's always pretty good for a laugh. He posts pictures of food, friends, dogs, and his fiancée, Reese. But this post was completely different.
It's a secret that I've been keeping that I don't want to keep anymore. I have depression. Bit of fun.
I can't remember what day I put it out, but I filmed it about 5 days before I actually put it out. I filmed it, I put it out, and then I deleted it. within about 15 seconds of putting it out. So someone may have seen it a week before everyone else. I don't know who that lucky soul would be. But and then I put it out about a week later after a few drinks. I sort of chose to share that the other day because I'm sort of better, I guess, in some ways. I'm not better, but, you know, I'm doing better. And I was looking for other people who were talking about it. You know, I started searching for people who were talking about depression and their thoughts on it and looking to, I don't know, engage with some of that sort of stuff. And, you know, there's lots out there, but I was having difficulty. And then I thought, hang on, I could just talk about it. I could be that person. And so that's why I eventually put that out.
But there's a big difference between talking about it with your friends and family and then talking about it in a public forum. Did you ever have some sort of hesitation about putting it out on social media?
Absolutely. I just said that I have it, and if other people have it, well, hello. So it was sort of pretty, I felt like it was pretty simple, little, you know, it was just a small little raise the flag sort of thing, I guess. You know, it's not an easy thing to do, but I sort of think that the reason that it isn't an easy thing to do is because of stigma, right? And the only way you break down that stigma is by talking about it and by saying that it is normal and this is something that heaps of people deal with, you know? That's the only way you break it down. So if I didn't do it, then I'd be contributing to that stigma.
I think the last line of the video was about stigma itself. And how do you... You talked about perpetuating it, but what have you faced?
Yeah, so, yes, exactly. So, if I don't put it out, then I'm contributing. But that is such a personal... That's such a personal thing. You know, other people, earlier on, shouldn't feel like they need to publicly talk about it. But the stigma that I've faced, so, you know, for example, I hadn't told a family member before I put that out because I was just wary of his opinions about mental health. And then I didn't even, it just slipped my mind. And then, oh, he's not going to listen to this. It's me dad. So I hadn't told him before, which is probably, you know, which is bad. And then I told the world and I suddenly realized that I hadn't told him. So I called him and said, oh, by the way, I just want to let you know that, you know, I've been seeing a psychiatrist and I'm taking Prozac because I've been diagnosed with depression. His response was, before asking how I am, he said, tell your mum, you know, tell Reese, but keep that close, keep that information close. Don't tell too many people. Mm. And I said, a little late. I have told everyone. I have broadcast this.
But no offense to your father, but that that is kind of exuding shame.
No offense. That is absolutely where that comes from. And that's that stigma. That's that old world, old school thought. No one would be ashamed of cancer. No one's ashamed of having a flu or breaking their leg, unless they were an idiot in the way that they did it. But you know, you shouldn't be ashamed of something that is not your choice. And that's why I think that to break down that stigma, you just have to tell people. You just have to tell people and normalize it, because it is normal. And like, in telling people, the number of others who have come forward and, you know, like, me too, me too, me too, the number of other people who've raised their hand and joined our little cry club is astounding. Like, you know, I knew that a lot of people had it, and, you know, I've worked in radio so long that, you know, we talk about it all the time, you know, in media. So I've been exposed to it a lot and know that a lot of people have it, but for some reason, we just don't talk about it. And so, I couldn't be happier that I did it, because it really has broken down those walls just in my own life. And, you know, hopefully, you know, the more people that do that, the more we can normalize it.
Are you worried that mental illness is so normal, that it is so prevalent?
I'm worried that it's not dealt with properly. You know, I'm worried that it's prevalent in the same way that I'm worried cancer's prevalent. But you're not going to, you know, we can't solve that. But what we can solve is the way in which we deal with it. You know, and I think the fact that we don't talk about it and the fact that we don't talk about it leads to isolation. And isolation is the worst thing that you can have if you've got a mental illness. You know, that's the absolute worst, and can lead to dying from it.
Tell me about how you did try to deal with it. Was a career in comedy a part of dealing with it?
No, I don't think so. I think that it happened to me, and it happens to people regardless of who they are. You know, I don't think there's sort of a sad clown thing. You know, it's certainly not necessary to comedy to be depressed. I don't believe that. And I don't think that comedy helps it more than accounting. You know, I think what helps it is talking to your friends and talking to a professional and seeking help. And I guess that I'm so lucky that I am in a career with media where I am just so exposed to it that I was able to recognize what was happening. So when I started, feeling really down, I was able to spot it. I was able to go, this is more than just being sad. And I guess as well, because it's not the first time that I'm getting better and better at spotting it as well. You know, I've lost the motivation to do the things that I want to do. And at that point, it was like, okay, let's go see someone. And I went to a local GP, and he found me. I got, they do the SAD test. There's this test. It's called the SAD test. They could have called it the DAS test, but they went with SAD just to really nail the point home.
Yeah.
And I did very well. I got like 19 out of 20, top score. So he sent me off to a psychiatrist, which I was expecting to see a psychologist, but he obviously decided, my GP decided that it was serious enough to see someone who can also prescribe medication. And so I headed off there, and it was the smartest decision of 2017.
How does Reese feel about it? Because he has been quite open in the past about his anxieties and his eating disorder. Has he been a supportive person?
Yeah, he's absolutely incredible. I'm very, very lucky to be able to spend my life in his pocket. you know, he gets that heads are weird, you know, that sometimes brains need help. Like, he doesn't even have to say anything. He just sort of he just sort of knows. So yeah, he's been fantastic. I'm very, very lucky to have that in my life, as well as the family and friends who have been so supportive. And now, having gone public, everybody else. I tell you what, if you want to have a show of the love that's in this world, just tell everyone you're sad, because they will come out in force to tell you how much they think you're a bit of all right. So, yeah.
What about your career? How does that look? Were you ever worried about announcing your depression and that impact on your career?
Firstly, I'm in an industry and a career where where there's lots of people who not suffer, but have depression or have a mental illness. So it's not new, you know. And secondly, it's the sort of place where sort of industry and career where sharing these things is kind of, well, I think anyway, it's kind of our job. If you have an audience and you have people who listen and want to hear from you, it's my job to be honest and to try and turn that into a positive thing. And after a while, I feel well enough that I can now do that. I can now turn this into something positive and try and make some good of it. Maybe it's different in different careers. You know, I don't work in a very blokey surround. You know, maybe it's different and harder. And I have no doubt that it is harder if you're on a work site and telling people that at night you have a cry every now and then. You know, that's probably a more difficult place to publicly declare that. But that's exactly why we need to get rid of this stigma and make it more normal.
Turning something into a positive, does that mean that you're going to go into some kind of advocacy? I mean, you've certainly taken a step into queer rights advocacy with your marriage equality podcast.
I'm not about to join the board of Beyond Blue.
Yeah.
There's people much better suited to that. But I think what I can do is just be honest. And if someone sends me a message because they've seen me being honest, then I can try and help them. But just doing what I can, I guess, to try and normalize it to people like my dad, try and get them to understand that actually, no, it's not the best thing to keep it close to your chest and to not tell anyone forever and ever. It is a illness that makes you feel isolated. It makes you feel alone. So if there's people in the public eye who are, you know, saying that it's okay, then that can only be a good thing, I think, yeah.
It's been really lovely to chat with you, Karen, and I wish you all the best.
Thanks so much, Ben. It's been great.
Didn't stub my toe. I broke my leg. I got a cast. All my friends have signed it. And I think we keep talking about ending stigma, and this might be how you do it. So if you have it as well, hello.